Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. I'm on the road. I'm on my way to see the Owls play. So we were expected to play tomorrow night, but because of weather in the Nashville area, I'm driving to Nashville today. As always, you can listen to us on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial, you can always stream us on the Odyssey app. You can even listen to us on demand there with the rewind feature. You can also stream us on the TuneIn Radio app as well as the iHeartRadio app. Back in studio, keeping the whole thing running is, of course, George Ruggiero. He's the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey.
Safe travels, my friend. Are we at least sounding okay?
Oh, yeah, we sound good.
All right, so that's all we need. My company is each and every Thursday. Writes about college football, college basketball for CBS Sports. Follow him on the Everything app at David W. Cobb. David Cobb, good day, sir.
Hey, good day, sir. Not a great night last night in Grizzlies land, but I guess that's just kind of the way life is these days.
Well, along the same lines of vibe, you know what was actually kind of refreshing last night? Was just kind of a run-of-the-mill, boring loss. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't have to – my Twitter's still down, so I don't have Twitter. But, like, not having to have everyone text me, did you see what Josh said? What, like, the fact that it was just, like, a run-of-the-mill loss. They got behind early, as is the script. And post-game, nothing was, you know, out of the ordinary. Like, it was sad that that was kind of a welcomed addition, but that was welcomed last night.
Well, the fact that it's now just become, okay, this is what we are. How did we get here so quickly? I'm sure we'll unpack it, but that's the shocking thing to me. It felt like 8 or 9 days ago, this thing had some decent early returns, even in the style of play, which is now being criticized and just completely, under the microscope in a way that's like, man, 5 games in, this thing looked okay, and now here we are sitting at 3-6, and it's like, oh, we're in a crisis. How we got there so fast is just the shocking thing to me. But yeah, I'm with you, man. I was refreshing to Michael's Twitter. I was refreshing Drew's Twitter, waiting for whatever drama might come from the post game availabilities. And thankfully there was nothing this time.
Yeah, well, we're going to start with that question that Cobb asked, because obviously everyone that's listening, if you're a regular listener, you've heard my thoughts on it, but I want to get Cobb's thoughts, because that's, I think, a great question. I think it's a good starting point. How did we get here? Because, you know, it did feel like before last Friday night, like, yeah, everybody wasn't sitting here going, you know, where's the championship parade going to be? But things that clearly had a different vibe. So we'll start with that question. Eric Aston, the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer, is going to join us during the next segment. We'll get his thoughts. on the Grizzlies. We'll get into the list. If we haven't gotten to the college football tasting menu, we'll do that. I kind of want to get Cobb's thoughts on some of what we're seeing and hearing on coaching carousel. We'll talk about that. We will welcome Jason Smith to the program during hour number two. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But Cobb, let's start first with that question, because you know, I've made my thoughts and feelings known, but from your vantage point, how do you think we got here?
Yeah, something happened between the end of the Suns win and the end of the Lakers game. And of course, you know, Isolo apparently ripped Ja after the Lakers game, which was totally understandable given his effort. But what was the reason for the lack of effort? That's what I want to know. Because, you know, when we get that game winner late against Phoenix, and it looked like a vintage Jaw, it looked like a serviceable team, but then something happened in the 48 hours between the end of that Phoenix game, as great as that was, and in the, in, you know, halftime of the Lakers game, where Jaw comes out in the second half and is just a shell of himself, doesn't look like he wants to be out there. Then he gets ripped for it, which I don't blame Isolo for that necessarily. So what happened? Did he was he literally just tired? I mean, it's just a guy who hasn't played a lot of basketball. Then he wasn't able to give the effort that physically, you know, that he would normally give in the second half of that game. Is that it? I don't know. But because it was fine. 3-2, 5 games in, everything was fine. Like, again, they weren't planning the championship parade, like you said, but everything was fine. And now everything is so not fine. And we get into it more, but I think part of it comes down to some issues with the front office and the fact that they weren't able to get everybody on the same page about what this thing was supposed to be. And I think that's where the disconnect is. I don't think that Ja and this staff are on the same page, and that's sad. That's pathetic. How do we have such misaligned expectations about what this was going to be? And that's the part of it to me that is the most frustrating.
Yeah, I think there's a lot there. I guess so. The other thing that I was a little confused about, so over at ESPN.com, I'm not trying to plug Cobb's competitor, but it's literally...
I read this story too. Like, this was the best, like, most thorough breakdown of it that I've seen.
Yeah, it is, for us, it was like, it wasn't a ton of new information, but it really laid it out cleanly. Hey, here's what's going on. And it didn't really feel hot takey. It was just trying to kind of, would we say it's fair? It was trying to like set a timeline and lay out how we got here.
For sure.
Okay. So what's a little confusing to me though is what was the cause of Ja Morant's second half against the Lakers? Because I was kind of under the impression Ja got ripped at the half, and that's why he kind of, you know, quiet quit in the second half on Friday. I think that's – has anyone seen an explanation for that? Because well, no, it seems – go ahead.
Well, so the ESPN story makes it sound like he was ripped after the game.
Right. That's what was a little confusing to me, because I was under the impression something was said at halftime, and then you could obviously – I got the impression something was said at halftime. Ja played the way that he did in the second half, and then the team suspended him.
So the ESPN explanation is that Morant's suspension stemmed from a post-game exchange with coach Tuomas Isolo after the Friday loss to the Lakers, in which Isolo challenged Morant's leadership, right? So that's why I'm asking it the way I'm asking it. That's why I'm couching it with what happened between the end of the Phoenix game and, let's say, halftime of the Lakers game, because if their reporting is accurate and that's from Shams, right? So like, you know, I would tend to believe that it's true.
I always think Shams, I've said this, I think Shams's stuff is always very, I don't necessarily like, it's not like, oh, I don't believe him anything. I just always think it is definitely agents tell your story. You know what I mean?
Right. So what the slant, you know, he might be getting here, what that is exactly, I'm not sure. But there was another thing in there, Jeffrey. I don't know if you noticed it, but it caught my attention as well, because it was written as a fact without any sort of citation or necessarily like basis that I had ever seen before. It was this. They said it's worth noting that over the years, turnover has left Morant without a sounding board or anyone he can relate to on the coaching staff or within the front office. I'd never seen that articulated quite that way before, and I thought that was interesting as well. Like this idea that maybe he feels like he doesn't have a liaison, so to speak, on this staff, which is interesting, right? Because, I mean, Isola was there last year. Jason March has been around for a while. He's had the same, I mean, Zach Kleiman's been the GM for the entirety of his tenure there. So, but this idea that like maybe Ja feels like he's on an island a little bit in terms of, you know, he doesn't have a guy necessarily on the staff or in the front office.
Yeah, but this goes straight aside.
Yeah, so it's interesting you bring that up because Jeff found a clip that I guess was going around the internet earlier this week, and it was of Danny Green's podcast. And so Danny Green was asked about it, and Danny gave a response that I think would probably have surprised some people. But Danny basically said Ja wholeheartedly trusted Taylor Jenkins. Like, he's like they could get into it, but he's like there was trust there. And it's kind of funny because it feels like I never got anyone to say it on the record. But I mean, it felt like much of last year and the de-evolution and then the whether or not Ja was kind of, you know, quiet quitting last year or had the Taylor Jenkins flu. I think everybody was kind of pointing the finger at Jenkins and saying that that was the cause of it. But maybe, like, let's say, now granted, Danny's not been in the locker room for a few years now, but it's something to consider. What if part of the problem was what I thought was a mistake in real time, Zach Kleiman or Robert Pera, whoever, their decision to not fire Taylor Jenkins, but to fire his entire staff and keep Jenkins, which I, at the time, this isn't second guessing because Mark and I were doing the show. We both thought in real time that was a dumb move because either you want him to be your coach or not and let him coach his team, or you're meddling and you basically made the decision to fire him, but you didn't do it because you didn't really have the nuts to do it.
Right. And then, so then it comes down to the Isola promotion and how are you going to do that without getting the star player on board ahead of time? Okay, so let's pretend a lot of the tension last year was about some of the new implementation of the substitution patterns that, you know, Isola brings to the table and the going all out in shorter spurts with a deeper rotation, playing 28, 29 minutes instead of 35, 36. Like that's all Isola stuff. So surely you would have realized last season that those things were a point of tension with your star player before you went out and promoted that head coach without getting the star player on board with it. And that's where, like, to me, some of this stuff starts to come down to the front office. And I'm not saying they've abysmally failed this franchise. I mean, look at the Cedric Howard draft pick, the Jalen Wells draft pick. It doesn't have to be all one way or the other. I'm not saying that Zach Kleiman has been a failure, right? I'm just saying that, like, some of the cracks we're seeing now, I think you have to blame on him, because when you're the leader of an organization, you have to get your subordinates on the same page about how to execute your vision for the company. It doesn't matter if you're running an NBA franchise, a Fortune 500 company, or a mom and pop down the street. Like, that's just basic business 101. And like, we have two of the most key components of the franchise here who 9 games into the season are not seeing eye to eye. And you know, and I thought it was interesting too, like, can't remember where, if it was in this ESPN article or, you know, I've been kind of consuming a lot of this content, and this idea that part of Tuomas Isolo's philosophy as a coach all along has been to confront in front of the team players who are underperforming or...
Yeah, they cite it. So Anthony Sane is the first person I saw that had the video clip of the actual podcast, but the podcast was cited in the ESPN story that we're referencing.
Right. So, but it's a little different, isn't it, Jeffrey, when you are confronting a Norwegian...
Totally agree.
The fourth guy off the bench for your Norwegian team who's probably making $87,000 a year, probably driving for Lyft part-time. It's a little bit different when you call out that guy versus calling out Ja Morant, who's on, you know, year three of a hundred and whatever million dollar contract. It's a little bit of a different dynamic there. And I think you have to have a trust, a relationship, sort of a rapport built maybe before you go down that avenue. So that's another place where this was misjudged. And if you're the front office, like, you got to understand, this is this guy's style. He's going to be direct. He's going to be brash. Do we have our star players prepared to accept that? Because you have to be in a certain headspace as a player, especially one who's been coddled and catered to for your entire career, which Ja Morant absolutely has been. You got to be in a certain headspace to take that. It's a lot easier to get on board with that, I think, when you're 19 or 20 and you're in your first or second year in the league, than it is when you've been an all-star, you've got your own shoe, you've been on an international tour, you know, you've got everything that an NBA star could want. All right, now who is this guy? Right? So, like, it just feels like this whole situation has just been mismanaged, really starting from the top.
Yeah, I think there's a few things here. So, number one, I feel like this front office it's the kid in high school that made a 36 on the ACT in the math section, but made like a 19 on reading comp and maybe like a 21 on science. And they always tell you they made a 36 on math. And it's like, okay, that's great. But like, there are other components of the job. They 100% have a proven draft record. I mean, just about every pick that they've made to some degree has contributed to them some form or fashion. Like, okay, maybe the Roddy and Zaire picks weren't great, but it's like, those are also drafts where there's a lot of misses because of, you know, the nature of those drafts post-COVID and kind of the scouting intel. So it's like, but overall, they have a very proven draft record that is extremely solid. But when it comes to acquiring new players, they have pretty much failed. When it comes to making decisions on who you should let out of the building, they have made the wrong calls. I think when it comes to how they've handled the relationship between coaching staff and front office, I don't think they have particularly high marks. So I'm with you in the sense of like, all right, do I think that anything right now merits the blowing up of the front office? No, but like, I do think we have to set it aside and wonder like, okay, is this something that needs to be further examined? And then go ahead, Stark.
Well, you give it a chance to work itself out. That's kind of where I'm at right now, because I know some people are in the blow it up now phase, right? We're 9 games into this thing, right? Like, I remember covering the 2018-19 season when, you know, they started out, oh, like 12-5 or something. And it was like, all right, you know, maybe this thing can still work. Well, at that point you were, 20% of the way through the season, and you were 12-5, and it looked like everything was going to be great. Well, in this scenario, you're 10% of the way through the season, and you're 3-6. It's way too early to blow it up. Things can change in the NBA. It's the nature of the beast. You're going through a difficult time right now, difficult portion of your schedule, when some of your key players are still unavailable, and your new scheme is quite obviously going through a lot of bumps in the road. When you get to the blow it up territory is if in mid-January you're languishing 8 games below 500, the joy is still not back with your star player, Jaren Jackson Jr., who has kind of gotten off scot-free here because we're talking about Jaw.
I'll tell you this, not locally.
Okay, then, good.
When we opened up the phones on Monday, there was a lot of people that were doing the Jaw can't do that, and it, but let me say this, and there was a lot of people that could not wait to just lay into Jaren. I'm just sitting there thinking, like, Jaren's catching some strays that I didn't actually foresee.
So here's the deal, though. I know his contract is such that it is going to be really hard to move, but I actually think you could get a better return. I think there's more value, more teams out there who would salivate over the opportunity to get a Jaren Jackson Jr. So come January, I think it's less about, well, are we going to blow this thing up and trade Jaw and make a shake up in the front office and all that? I think it's kind of then what can you maybe get for Jaren? Because the caliber of player that he is, the defense that he brings, he is a model citizen. I mean, he's not maybe the vocal on court leader, the galvanizer of the locker room.
There's a reason why the organization wasted 0.1 seconds giving Jaren his extension.
For sure. Like he very, very much not a problem child whatsoever. And thank you, Jaren, for that. Like in this moment, like, thank you for being a good guy, you know, just an easy person to work with. But, he's also not your alpha. Like, I think we've all known that for years. And so like, hey, look, that's where I'm kind of at is like, you get to mid-January and this thing is still not even close to going in the right direction. Then I think that's when you start to consider blowing it up. But it's too early to do that now when you've had zero games with Zach Edey, Brandon Clark, Ty Jerome. It's just, you know, Scottie Pippen Jr. This thing is, you know, it was never going to be perfect out of the gate. And the frustrating part is that it seemed like we were in a good spot a week ago, and now it's this.
Yeah, and to me, like, that's kind of what I want to get to, because, listen, I love my hometown and my home as much as anyone, but we gotta have to look in the mirror, and we can be over dramatic. Why? It feels like this thing went from 0 to 100 in basically a half of basketball in a game that they lost by what, 5 points, in a game that they were 2-point underdogs, and Luka had what, 44? And yeah. like there was nothing. When you looked at the teams that were on the floor, like, there was nothing about that loss that was particularly bad. I believe the only game that they have lost as a favorite was the Miami game, which, to be clear, was a disgusting basketball game, a disgusting effort. They got absolutely curb stomped. But when you looked at it, it's like, well, Miami made the decision to go with two bigs, and they just absolutely exploited the Grizzlies. Well, what's kind of interesting is I felt like this year – everyone kind of had like reasonable expectations of, hey, we know it's going to be tough until the reinforcements come. And here we are. And now it's like this 5-alarm fire. And it's like, how did we get here? And this is the part where I guess, is this the Ja Morant of it all? Because everyone is so like, I don't, whether or not he realizes it, it feels to me the fan base goes exactly as he goes. Like, when he's happy, everybody's happy. But when he's, you know, got bad body language, everybody's, the sky is falling. And I guess that's why we are where we are. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know what is realistically fair. Like, what is the fair expectation? What should we they be judged against right now? Because truthfully, they haven't really lost a basketball game that I thought they should have won, given who's on the floor. And I don't really know, like, what the expectation is right now.
Well, the expectation is that your star player and your head coach are not butting heads 9 games into the season.
And I guess, I mean, let's ask this question. Is this Fizdale Mark?
Yeah, it's a version of it. It is. Except I would actually say that Tomas Isolo has less cachet built up than David Fizdale did at that point in his NBA coaching career. I mean, this guy is still very, very new to the National Basketball Association, and he's, you know, he's trying to throw his weight around, and the way he did it the other night, it backfired, and now this team is in a very precarious situation. So I mean, I think part of the consternation too is, yeah, okay, so we've got Ja, who's basically playing without a soul right now. You can just see it in his eyes every trip up and down the floor. Like, there's moments where the fire sort of comes back in a little spurts, but then it's just the joy, as he's stated and as DeMichael asked him, is so obviously not there. And now that's your situation as you go into, okay, you got Dallas at home on Friday. That's a winnable game. But then it's, okay, you got OKC, loss. New York Knicks on the road, loss. Celtics on the road, loss. Cavs on the road, loss. Spurs on the road, probably a loss. I mean, so we're sitting here at 3-6 right now. Let's say you beat the Mavericks at home on Friday night, then you're at 4-6, but then you got 5 in a row that you're going to be pretty significantly, you know, an underdog. So, like, I think that's part of it too, is just looking at what's ahead and feeling, being like, man, this feels rough now. What's this going to feel like in 10 days? I think that's the, it's everyone was sort of bracing for impact, you know. It's like, if this is where we are already, what's this going to look like in 10 days? And I think that's kind of the part of the fear as well.
Well, I also wonder this. Are they really this bad, or are they shooting the basketball this bad? Because, like, if Ja's not shooting, what, 13% from three? But, like, again, I'm not saying Ja's going to ever be a 40% three-point shooter. But if Ja were shooting 31%, I just wonder how much of this is just tied back to they're not hitting shots and therefore they're not playing well. Like Jalen's not been good. KCP has not made shots. Like I wonder how much of this, because you and I talked about this. It's not like they're missing like really tough shots. They're missing kind of the warm-up baskets.
Yeah, so Jalen Wells, I think, is going through a little sophomore slump right now on the offensive side. I would say more so than anything, though, it's probably tied to the defense, because when you're getting the ball out of the basket every time, it makes it harder for them to get those sort of transition looks against a non-set defense. And I think that's where not having a true center. I mean, Jock Landale is doing his vet minimum, bunnies and boards. Like, I don't mean to, like, he's doing exactly what you thought.
You're on the same page on this one. Like, hey, I'm not going to sit here and act like he's the reason they stink. Like, how many other teams would he be starting for right now?
No, exactly. So, like, he's doing what he's capable of doing, but that's just not enough to kind of anchor the interior of an NBA defense. And then, you know, I mean, let's not kid ourselves here. Like, part of the issue with Ja Morant as a player in general, whether it's joyful Ja or sad Ja, is, you know, the defensive exploitation of him is a real thing. And then you throw in, okay, he's not performing at a high level offensively. To me, that just sort of magnifies the defensive issues that come with playing him as much as he plays. Is like, okay, you can sort of write it off when you know he's going to go out there and get in the pain and have a 8 assists to 2 turnover type of game with 27 points and 10 of 17 from the field or whatever. But when this is the version of Ja that you're getting, it's like, well, you're such a defensive liability. You're not bringing anything really too unique right now offensively. But what's the alternative? I mean, with Ty Jerome and Scottie Pippen Jr. on the bench, injured, like, you know, and you don't have any other options. So it's kind of got to be, you know, that's kind of got to be what it is. And so that's the problem, I think, is the defense. It's like, you know, last night, you know, you're just getting the ball out of the basket every time, and it makes it really hard to get those clean looks.
Well, I also think, though, the converse is true, because they're just absolute brick masons from the floor. Every other team's offensive possessions are off a rebound in transition against not a set defense. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it works both ways. Not only are the Grizzlies having to play offense against teams that are making more shots. I guess this is just kind of what I come back to, because, you know, I'm exploring this like everyone. I just wonder if Ja, you know, Ja's a very moody player, for better or worse. I just wonder if he were shooting 30% from three, if it's not this bad. Because I think part of your point is, all right, what are teams doing to him? Chris Harrington mentioned this to me the other day, that, you know, when everybody was hyper-analyzing what Ja's conversations would be like with Isolo, he said during like a free throw, Ja was going up to him and basically saying, like, I don't have space, I don't have space. And it was not a consternation conversation. It was, hey, you know, like, it was coach talking to player. And I just think a big part of that is every team is just saying, we're not letting you inside, but big boy, if you want to take those threes, have at it. And if he were just making a few more, well, then all of a sudden I think things would be different. Like, I think it really just comes back to, so much of this is Ja is just shooting the basketball so poorly right now.
Well, yeah, that's part of it. And then also it's like, can you really expect to have space when you traded Desmond Bane? I mean, and Jalen Wells.
And this is where I think Ja also has, like, this is where I'll meet him halfway. when you are sitting there and making phenomenal basketball plays to get guys wide open threes and wide open dunks and nobody's finishing, I can understand where the frustration would come into play.
Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily blame Ja Morant for being frustrated. I blame Ja Morant for what we all saw in the second half against the Lakers, which was about 25 possessions of the most lackadaisical effort that you'll ever see in your life. I blame him for that. I don't really hold what he said after the game against him as much as I do the lack of effort in the second half against the Lakers. And then to me, I kind of just draw the line back to the front office on it, because the fact that you paired a star player and a head coach together and we're not able to set the expectations for both on what that relationship should look like and what the style of play would look like, that's an indictment on the leadership. You know, at this point, that Ja Morant is not the, he doesn't have Teflon skin. He doesn't have the sort of mental toughness, I guess, to overcome adversity in real time and put that tough face on, you know, when life and reality hits him in the face, right? Like, as you say, he's a bit of a moody player. Like, you should know that by now.
And he's a front runner. Like, there's no denying that. Yeah.
Like, you should know that by now, though. Yeah. You should know that by now, though, and understand how to manage him and manage your franchise in such a way that if you want to move forward with him as your star player, you can mitigate and minimize the issues that come with that. It shouldn't be a surprise anymore. And the fact that, like, this stuff keeps happening, if you want to move forward with him as your star player, you need to be better about putting him in better situations. And this is obviously not a good situation. And, you know, again, like the second half effort against the Lakers, blame Ja for that. Like, that, I don't think there's any excuse for that. I don't blame Isolo for ripping him for that. But it's not fun, man. It's not fun. I'm like, it's kind of like a train wreck that you can't look away from. Like, I can't wait to watch these guys, because it's like, oh gosh, what's the next episode in this soap opera going to be? But it's just, something's got to change. Something has to change. And maybe it's the guys coming back. Maybe it's getting Scottie Pippen Jr. and Ty Jerome in there and Zach Edey and Brandon Clark and just having a little bit more depth, having some fresh faces. Maybe that's it. But, like, you know, if you're looking for any one of those guys to save your season, good luck. Maybe as a collective unit, like, they can help. But none of those guys on their own are, like, the guy who is going to fix it. I don't have any doubt about that. So it's, you know, it's one of those deals where it's like, well, yeah, you just got to hope the reinforcements, like, change the vibes. Like, that's honestly kind of all you can hang your hat on at this point.
No, I definitely think it's fair to say, to act like just getting Zach Edey back or getting Ty Jerome back. By the way, we don't even know what his health's going to be. We know it was a calf strain, but we've seen plenty of examples where that calf strain turns into Achilles. So, like, we don't know. I do think upgrading from Landell to Edey, it will be a noticeable change. But what if that takes a minute to get the adjustments made? And, you know, Zach has not played basketball since, you know, game four last year. So, you know, there's an element of that. I think we'll wrap with this question before we get to Eric. Did we maybe make too big of an assumption during the summer that Ja was on board with this hire? I think that's a fair question to ask, right?
No doubt. That's kind of at the crux of the issue right now, is did the Grizzlies legitimately conduct a coaching search? I mean, I don't know. This seems like it was rubber stamped and probably in the works from, I would venture to say, before Taylor Jenkins was fired. That's kind of what it feels like. So I don't know what to make of that. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I guess I would say yes, maybe I did make too big of an assumption, because I was kind of listening. A, they didn't have a press conference, which, okay, that was a weird red flag to me. And I get it. You know, he lives overseas or whatever. Like, I get there could have been logistical issues, but you couldn't hold, like, a one-day press conference for a guy that's going to be in charge of your organization. That was always super weird to me. So questions weren't really asked, which also tells me they were hiding. So why didn't they want questions asked? Okay. And I think maybe Michael leaked that
Zach Kleiman was very open about, we're in the Ja Morant business, and then they make the hire, and maybe I just assumed, or maybe presumed, as my eighth grade English teacher sitting next to me, that, well, of course, like, there was at least some type of conversation, but maybe not. You know what I mean? Like, now I think you have to, like, I think you legitimately have to question everything about the decision.
Yeah. That's where I'm at with it, is you've got a coach and a star player who don't see eye to eye, and that's a big problem. In this NBA, the hire needs to be made with the clear, you know, implied consent of the star player. Otherwise, you're setting yourself up for this exact situation. And, okay, let's play it the other way. Let's say that the hire was made with the approval of Ja Morant. Well, then how did we get so sideways this fast? To me, that implies a breakdown in communication over what the system was going to be. Because I think if you really, like, listen to what Tomas Isola wants to do and are receptive to the concepts and trust that he has a good basketball mind, like, you can get to a place pretty easily where, okay, that makes sense. We're going to play harder in shorter spurts to try to outwork the opponent. That means we'll have slightly fewer minutes. But in those minutes that you do play, you're going to get the same amount of shots, the same amount of touches. Your stats, your counting stats probably won't look all that different because we're going to go so fast that there's going to be more possessions. Like, you don't have to be brilliant to understand that. But, like, if we couldn't even get to a point where the star player understood that, then, like, what are we doing? And if he did understand that and he didn't want the hire made, then, like, why, like, what are we doing? Yeah, that's the issue here, man. It's like, but again, I think we have to give it whatever, like, give it time. Like, you've mentioned it a number of times. Like, nobody expected this Grizzlies team to be the one to win the NBA Finals. We're 9 games in. The hurdles in the road have been more extreme than you hoped they would be. But it's a long season. This is a grind of an NBA that we live in. Other teams are going to deal with injuries too. Other teams are going to load manage their stars as well. There might be some wins here in this stretch that we don't see on paper, but maybe we don't know, like, you know, what the rest plan is for some of the stars who are coming up on this East Coast road trip, right? So, like, you know, you sneak a couple in here or there, Ja gets hot from three, maybe the thing starts to change. We can all hold hands again. That's the hope. That's the hope, man. Just trying
Listen,
to be optimistic.
I don't even need him to get hot. I just need him to shoot 30%.
Yeah. Just make them come out and guard you a little bit on the perimeter.
Yeah, that's
so you can
all
get
I
by and get to the paint.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Eric Hasseltine joins the program. We'll ask him if it's as bad as it looks because he's been there in person. Let's get Eric's thoughts next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
That music.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. 1. It's $15 a month. 2. Seriously, it's $15 a month. 3. No big contract. 4. I use it. 5. My mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. It's about getting the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. And to find candidates who match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. Stop struggling to get your job post even seen on other sites. Give your job the best chance to be seen with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. They help you stand out and hire quality candidates who can drive the results you need. Sponsored Jobs boost your post for quality candidates so you can reach the exact people you want faster. Join the 1.6 million companies that sponsor their jobs with Indeed. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Means we welcome the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer to the program. He, of course, is Eric Hasseltine. Eric, I guess let's start with this question. You see it every night. You know what it's supposed to look like. Is it as bad as it feels right now when you're watching the team?
Well, I mean, it's not good.
Yeah.
It's the offense kind of seems to be getting bogged down at times and not into their sets quickly enough. Tuomasi Salo alluded to that. I think you're seeing a lot of the same defenses come at them. I mean, anybody that listens to our broadcast is probably tired of hearing me talk about the 3-2 shell zone, which is always how I was taught to call it. So other people may call it something else, but it's basically three on the perimeter and two underneath. And the minute the ball handler gets in the paint, you collapse on them. And, you know, it's designed to nullify ball screens and, you know, take away threes. Like you set a screen for the ball handler, there's still two defenders at the top that can pinch. So it's, that's kind of thrown it for a loop. I think not having a true secondary ball handler has thrown it for a loop. You know, look, coach has got his system of shorter stints, bigger bursts type thing, higher energy and intensity in a shorter time span. And that's fine. But I don't, you know, I don't think that you can point the finger at just one thing right now. The defensive end, they're getting disconnected at times. They're overcommitting to help. There's been a lot of open corner threes. And you do have to take into account that this is a very new group together. Like, there are a lot of guys that have not played alongside the other ones. But you've now had a month of training, you know, 3 weeks of training camp, and we're into November, and they started a month ago. It should be getting better. You've also faced some tough teams. The last two teams are exactly what you're going to struggle with the bigs out. Physical, rebounding, defensive intensity, and ball movement with size. I mean, there were just several shots last night where Grizzly defenders were there, but at 6'6", it's hard to stop a guy 6'11 shooting over the top of you. It's tough. That's why size is precious at times. So it's a tough question because I don't know if you want to say it's as bad as it looks. They have gotten good looks and not made them. I was listening on, you know, before I came on to your assessment. You weren't counting on guys to be struggling from the three-point line this much. Like you said, you're never going to think that Ja Morant's going to be a 45 or 40% three-point shooter, but he's also not a 15% three-point. Ells is not a sub-20% three-point shooter. It's not who they are. It's just sometimes I think those numbers get inflated too because you're taking longer to get in the sets and you're having to hoist a shot that is really tough. You know, I alluded to this the other night when they had, I think, three or four shot clock violations and at least three or four times where they had to hoist a tough shot to beat the shot clock buzzer. You've got to get in your sets quicker. whether that's because you're not getting stops or you're not getting the ball up quickly enough, defenses are getting back. That's just got to be something that gets figured out. And that's what, you know, the coaches are working on and trying to do. So, man, it's tough because I know a lot of people are frustrated. And, you know, the ironic thing is I get it, and I'm not trying to sugarcoat it. And certainly we know what happened in the Laker game and how it went wrong in the second half. But that second quarter of the Laker game also, to be fair, was one of the best 12-minute stretches they've had. So with that said, what does that mean? Does that mean that that they can't do it? No, because we've seen them do it. Does that mean that they are just in a rut? Yeah, and like, I'm not one to go, well, if they had won that game and no one had said anything in the locker room and you go up and you can win a game against Toronto, you could be this and this and that. But you're not. And the fact that you're not is the reality. And the fact that you have a really tough road ahead, and I'm not going to take Dallas out of the tough part of that, because if you go in thinking, oh, yeah, well, we can get Dallas, they're struggling to start. They're missing guys. They're banged up. That's where you lead into letdowns. So, yeah, man, it's tough. I mean, you clearly have – we've all heard the talks. You have some disconnect between – your coach and your star, and they've either got to come together or figure something out, because that's never going to work. It's never worked in a league where a coach and a star player aren't on the same page and they found high levels of success. That's just, it's not the reality of the situation. So I hope it does. You know, it's a tough part. It's a tough spot to be in, because I don't want to say this like I'm Johnny Popular, but I get along with all the guys. I get along with all the coaches. And it's hard to see when they're not working cohesively together.
So, Eric, what's your impression of what needs to change for Jaren to be more seamlessly integrated into this offense? Because last night was the second time in four games where he's attempted eight or fewer shots. And, you know, that seems like a bit of an issue when, you know, this is a guy who is capable, we've seen it over the years, of carrying a significant offensive load. But for whatever reason, those shots just don't seem to be presenting themselves for him in a very fluid way.
It's got to start with off-ball movement and ball movement itself, like not dribble ball movement, passing ball movement, getting the defense to rotate. If you notice last night, they're fronting Jaren, or they're getting guys being super physical with him. I think it was Tari Eason played over the top of a bounce pass and got a steal. Well, there wasn't a great deal of space between the ball handler, whoever threw the pass, I can't remember if it was Ja or somebody else, and Jaren, and that gave the defender an advantage. So you got to get your spacing right. And, you know, you've got to come up and find a spot where he can catch and figure out holes in whatever defense is being thrown at you where Jaren can maximize his abilities. I mean, Jaren's no stranger to a double team. When the Grizzlies were in that injury-riddled season a couple years ago, Jaren Jackson Jr. was scoring against double and triple teams because he was going and they were making a concerted effort to feed him the ball, not force feed him, but feed him the ball. And I think there's a difference there too. You know, you've got a guy that can go get the ball, but where are you getting him the ball? Are you getting to him where he can really make an effective move? If you're getting him the ball on the sideline, you know, towards the sideline of the 3-point line, or, you know, towards the benches, wherever you want to say it, and he's trying to drive against that zone defense, well, the wing defender is going to collapse, the baseline defender is going to collapse, and now he's got a double team. And so he's either got to kick it out quickly or get to that spot quickly. He's made decisive moves at times, but you're right. You can't have a guy that's averaged over 20 points a game in the league getting one shot and a half. You got to make sure you go get him a shot. I think that's where, when you come out of a game, when you come start a game, I think the one thing you can always do to a player to make them feel like you're with them is run the first play for them. Say, we are going here and we're going here first. And they did that in Toronto. He had 7 points right off the bat, but then the rotations were what the rotations were and he came out. And read into that however you want. I mean, if you're going to coach the team and that's your rotation, coach the team, that's your rotation. He's the coach is the one who will have to answer to that. There are those that would say you can't take him out when he's going like that. You got to feel it. if that's not how he coaches, that's not how he coaches. And that should be known throughout the locker room at this point. And you either got to get over it or something's going to change, you know? So, it's tough because I'm not an NBA coach, so I don't want to be critical of what they are doing because their job is hard enough in terms of, like, being, like, going in on them type of thing. But I don't, you know, I think we're all adults, and if I say I might do it differently, it doesn't mean I'm openly questioning what they're doing. You see what I'm saying? It's kind of, to be fair with you guys, it's kind of a sticky subject because you don't want to say the wrong thing and have it misconstrued and have people out there put words in your mouth. I'm trying to give you the best answer I can.
It's a lot like, okay, if I were running a generic football team, I think if I had a quarterback who could do it, I could run the air raid. I don't think that everyone that doesn't want to run the air raid is wrong. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? But I think that's kind of the question that I have. And it's like, I don't think I'm smarter than an entire staff of NBA coaches, but what are you seeing with the starts? Because to me, in the games that are like relatively, you know, reasonably competitive and that they could have a chance of winning, it feels like a big problem is they dig themselves these holes and they just can't get out of them. And it feels like last night, what? They're basically trailing by 12 in the first quarter. And it felt like that, it just felt like the lead stuck around 12 for most of the game.
Well, you scored the first basket and then it was a 10-0 run.
Yeah.
Again, I think that's where Coach was saying we've got to get into our sets quicker. We've got to get stops defensively. Well, you got to figure out when you don't get a stop, too, how to get it out and run, because one of the real strengths in the past has been, and I would talk about this with the teams that were, you know, clicking and finishing in second in the West, was they would build a little bit of a lead. You'd see a team make a run at them. You know, like let's say they were up 8 and a team gets back-to-back buckets and they start feeling really good about themselves. Well, they would blink and the Grizzlies would take it out of the net and run back down and hit a 3. And all those two, you know, all the feelings those two baskets generated of, yeah, hey, we're back in this, get a little deflated when someone buries a 3 on the other end. It requires you making the 3, and they haven't been great at that. It was better last night. The percentage dropped a little at the end of the game when it was, you know, kind of they emptied and put the reserves in, and so it dropped because I think they missed 2 or 3 at the end right in a row. But they were better with it last night. But, like, there were multiple times in a lot of the games where you look up and they're shooting 29% from 3, and it's not like they've only taken 7. They've taken, like, 29 or 30, and the shot's not falling. For whatever reason that is, that's, again, got to figure that out. You got to figure out, are you rushing? Are you pressing? Are you feeling that pressure of, okay, I've got to make a play, and you're stepping out and doing something that's not in your realm of your game and trying to do it individually rather than work as a group. Again, that all needs to be hammered out. It's hard to practice in this league. And when you have a new coach, a lot of teams will go through these growing pains and new rosters of, once the season starts, practice is a luxury if you can get it. And it's not often because you're running around crazy. Jeffrey, you and I talk about this all the time. And even there are days where you have an opportunity possibly to practice. If you practice those guys hard, you're just beating them up more. You got to take into account that this thing's going until April. You know, I'm not going to burn my guys out in November. And that's a big, you know, part of this league now is watching the wear and tear. Whereas, you know, when I started, you practiced every day. You know, when I got into the NBA, you were not only practicing every off day, but the times you got off were after back-to-backs, but there were enough of those where maybe you got a day off, you got treatment, and then had something the next day, whatever it may be. But you weren't spending the night in cities on the road after games. You were flying late hours, but then, you know, people started figuring out what worked for the body better. But when you can't practice, and I think that's something that for Coach Isalo, he's used to. When you coach in Europe, you got all kinds of time to practice. You're not playing 82 games. You're playing, some of those leagues play 36, some of them play 42, whatever the league is, but it's over the same time frame. Cut this season in half, how many days do you have to practice? There's 41 days right there, and that can make a big difference. So I don't know if it's film that you can point out to, or, you know, X, Y, and Z, but whether the solution is shorten the rotations, extend the minutes on the floor, play fewer guys, whatever it may be. He's not wrong in that the league is changing. The league is changing, and you're seeing a lot of guys step in and have big numbers. I mean, look at Los Angeles
and the Lakers. I mean, it's one night it's Jake LaRavia, one night it's Nick Smith Jr., and they get wins, and people are going, who are these guys? It's like, you know, hey, look, they didn't walk into Walmart and buy a jersey. They're NBA players. They can make shots if the offense is flowing and it's going there. And if they're not making shots, you're not going to win. I mean, that's what everybody always said. It's a make or miss league. If you're not making shots, you're not winning because the other team probably is. So it's hard. I know the fans are frustrated. I know the players are frustrated. I know the coaches are frustrated. It's hard sometimes when you're calling the game to not sound frustrated because, you, Jeffrey, you know me, and you know, Cobb, you know me well enough, too. I'm competitive. I like to win. I like in everything I do, I want to win. I've never met an NBA player that steps on the hardwood and goes, yeah, it'd be cool if we don't win tonight. It'd be fine. Nobody says that. And it doesn't matter what it is. It's not just basketball. It's everything. These are the most competitive humans on the planet. And we all know what competitive humans do when they're not succeeding or thriving. They get angry. They get frustrated. They get mad. Some handle it in different ways. I know probably some of the calls that I've made in the last week or so have sounded like where I'm frustrated. It is frustrating because you want the best for them because you know all the work and the time and effort that goes into it. And, you know, it's, you have to temper that. And so I'm trying to do the same and just ride through it. And, hopefully it's a problem that can be fixed. It's just going to be really hard to see that fix when you're facing, you know, out of your next six games, you're facing five playoff teams potentially if Boston figures it out to do it without Tatum. A lot of people didn't think they would be there, but certainly probably isn't at least a play-in in the East. You know that the Cavaliers are going to be there. You know that the Knicks are going to be there. The Spurs appear that they're going to be there. And you know the Thunder are really good, and you got them on Sunday. So, you know, if you struggle through those games, is that the norm? Is that, would that have happened anyway? Maybe. But if it looks like it's not competitive, that's when people get frustrated.
Eric, we really appreciate it, my man.
I love the fact that you're in a car. I think I did that twice when I got COVID and couldn't call the games. The only two games in my career I didn't do play-by-play, but I had to do the pregame show in the car driving on I-10 to get to I-40 and drive across the country home.
Oh, buddy, that drive. Turn when you get to I-40, turn right for 2,400 miles.
Just set the cruise control and take a nap, and then you'll see empty fields and then a casino and then a gas station and then empty fields and then a casino and a gas station until you get to Oklahoma City.
All right, my man. Good luck tomorrow night.
Hey, good luck tonight. Have a great call, bud.
Well, like you said, I'm about to have one of those Eric Hasselton games where I don't love Miles' chances. I love my team, but I don't love our chances tonight. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we haven't gotten to talk about the slate of college football. Obviously, tomorrow night, the Tigers have a big game. We'll talk about that as well as the Saturday slate and more when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Once upon a mundane morning, Barb's day got busy without warning. A realtor in need of an open house sign? No, 50 of them. And designed before 9.
My head hurts.
Any mighty tools to help with this plight?
Aha!
Barb made her move. She opened Canva and got in the groove.
Bulk creating Canva sheets. Create 50 signs fit for suburban streets.
Done in a click, all complete.
Sweet!
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at canva.com.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.